Blog Talk Radio.
Hard drives that he wanted to destroy. He was either keeping some records, some diary,
files about himself. So that's part of this unlocking this mystery of why he did what he did.
And there's an ongoing attempt to try to uncover that.
That's right.
Look at what is actually being done. Look at the amazing what technology has brought to the lying part of television. Now, tell me what you have actually seen of Sandy Hook. We have not seen blown out windows. We have not seen dead bodies. Not seen anything. I have seen, in fact, what we've heard is the parents haven't even seen the bodies. And then, they were taken away in the middle of the night in a refrigerated van. Are you effing kidding me?
But I will say one thing that kind of bothers me, which is that there has been not one eyewitness account that I've heard of anyone seeing this guy shooting anyone or shooting around. Even when he apparently killed everyone who laid eyes on him before he killed himself. And I don't even know that it was him that did any of it. I mean, they could bring a dead guy in there. Some paid assassin could come and shoot up a bunch of people or not, and then throw this guy's body in the certainly hurt. I mean, has anyone said, yeah, he came in wearing, said, first there was a report he was wearing a mask. I don't know why, but okay, he was wearing a mask. So we don't even know who it was, actually, if he got a mask on. Could have been anyone. And then, has anyone said, yeah, he started firing around, I had to duck, he shot so-and-so, or, I mean, has there been one eyewitness report of him,
shooting a gun? No, there has been nothing. We've seen journalists trolling online to try and get a hold of people. We have not seen this. We started this show off with this dad, and I have shown this to actors, and the actors all say to me, wow, if that was really an act, then that guy is really, really, really good. And people do respond very strangely in certain types of environments of severe stress. But again, all I'm seeing. I don't know where he's standing. I see a brick wall. I see some dudes. Please do not forget, you saw nothing. You saw television. You saw nothing. So believe what you will, but please, you did not see anything with your own two eyes, and I have been on the other side of that box too much with some very so-called innocent stuff. Week in, week out, I made trickery. So you did not see anything. And the discussion is not about the guy they arrested in the woods, all these other things. Why is no one asking any questions about that? All it is about guns and medication and the internet is bad. And to me, it literally is no different. I didn't see it. I just can't tell you. From where I'm coming from my personal perspective, I don't know. Please at least show me the shot out building. Please. They show pictures with shadows that can only be very early in the morning or very late at night, not at 11 o'clock. They were surrounding the kids' home at 9:15 before this even happened. I mean, there's so many discrepancies. So much is wrong. And then, oh, by the way, anyone who says anything on the internet, shut up, slave. We're going to arrest you. We're going to prosecute you because you're spreading disinformation. I don't know what happened. I don't know why this happened. I don't know if anything happened. But as far as I'm concerned, it's all media magic.
Absolutely right. I thought that when I first saw it.
There's certainly a lot of unanswered questions. That's
I wrote that back when it happened, back last month. You can go to my site, lastewilson.org, and the day after, I had so many questions because all the media reports were all screwed up, and I wrote it down. I wrote about it on my site.
Yeah, they didn't seem to be getting any information.
They were all messed up. Everybody's the information was all different than.
No one was allowed near the building look at it.
No, and
was no real investigative journalism going on.
No, everything was shut up, and they found out several guys were there. They arrested another guy,
And then the brother.
Yeah, mostly.
That was all very odd. And the father, I've never seen.
Nobody's seen him either. So. The funny part about it, too, is the mother was shot in the face. She was dead. Or whether it was the mother or not, who the hell knows?
Yeah.
I mean,
woman.
Somebody was shot in the face, and whether or not it was her. There's so many things that are so easy to put together. Like you said, it was media magic. You know?
Yeah.
And that's pretty much what it was. Just like 9/11, there was so much there that just.
Well, people were so stunned and so horrified they didn't even, they couldn't even think.
Of course not.
They
yeah,
were just absorbed by the tragedy of
yeah.
those little kids and the crying parents. I mean, talk about a diversion.
Oh, really? I thought this was a good article to read.
I thought it was, too. It's about the banking elite, folks.
Yeah, and what's going on.
And this is from Infowars.com, which is a pretty good site.
Yeah,
and Paul
Jones.
Joseph Watson and Alec Jones. Why the business elite want riots in America. Every indication clearly suggests that the authorities in the United States are preparing for a widespread civil unrest. This trend has not emerged by accident. It is part of a tried and tested method used by the banking elite to seize control of nations, strip them of assets, and absorb them into the New World Order. There is a crucial economic imperative as to why the elite is seeking to engineer and exploit social unrest. As respected investigative reporter Greg Palast exposed in 2001, the global banking elite, namely the World Bank and the IMF, have honed a technique that has allowed them to asset strip numerous other countries in the past. That technique has come to be known as the IMF riot. In April 2001, Palast obtained leaked World Bank documents that outlined a four-step process on how to loot nations of their wealth and infrastructure, placing control of resources into the hands of the banking elite. One of the final steps of that process, the IMF riot, is detailed how the elite would plan for mass civil unrest ahead of time that would have the effect of scaring off investors and causing government bankruptcies. This economic arson has its bright side for foreigners, who can then pick off remaining assets at fire sale prices, writes Palast, adding. A pattern emerges. There are lots of losers, but clear winners seem to be the Western banks and the U.S. Treasury. In other words, the banking elite creates the very economic environment, soaring interest rates, spiraling food prices, poverty, lower standards of living, that precipitates civil unrest, and then, like vultures, swoops down to devour what remains of the country's assets. On the cheap.
We have already seen this process unfold in places like Bolivia, Ecuador, Indochina.
No, Indonesia.
Indonesia. Greece and Argentina. Next on the chopping block are Spain, Italy, Britain, and France, all of which have been widespread riots over the last 2 years. As Hot June Chang explains in The Guardian, the root of Europe's riots were sparked by governments inflicting an old IMF-style program on their own populations, namely the same programs of austerity, privatization, and deregulation that caused the riots of the 80s and 90s in the poorer countries. Although the likes of the IMF and the World Bank have pillaged half of the globe with their economic terrorism, America remains the ultimate prize, the first step of the four-step process for bankster seizure of a country. Privatization of state-owned assets is already underway in America, with infrastructure being sold off to foreign corporations with the aid of Goldman Sachs at a frightening pace.
A key component of the banking elite's insidious agenda to bring about economic collapse in America by design also enters around the process of deindustrializing the country, eviscerating the nation's platform for self-sufficiency and replacing it with a dependence on banker bailouts. This has already been largely achieved in Europe, with just about every major economy on the continent run by Goldman Sachs-affiliated technocrats. In the United States, 32% of manufacturing jobs have been lost since 2000, while 56,000 manufacturing facilities have been mothballed since 2001. The Obama administration has also declared war on the coal industry, with Obama himself promising to bankrupt anyone who tries to build a new coal plant. Meanwhile, China, build a new coal plant every 2 weeks. Given the clear economic motive for stirring unrest in the United States, we'd expect to see preparations for domestic disorder in numerous different disguises, and indeed the signs are everywhere. The National Defense Authorization Act. The Obama administration's passage of the NDA legislation that authorizes kidnapping and indefinite detention without trial of American citizens on U.S. soil serves to create the framework for mass arrests of protesters and journalists in a time of declared national emergency. I'm very upset about the passing this out. I think it's horrible.
Obama's war on whistleblowers. The Obama administration's brazen and aggressive prosecution of whistleblowers for divulging government corruption in the public interest is clearly a device designed to intimidate whistleblowers from speaking out when the proverbial hits the fan. Spying on social media for signs of unrest, the Department of Homeland Security and other federal agencies are actively engaged in spying on social media as well as news sites to look for reports or comments that reflected adversely on the U.S. government and the DHS. The government is on the lookout for the tipping point when heated online rhetoric spills onto the streets in the form of unrest.
Building huge spy centers to track unrest. The NASA and the NSA is building the country's biggest spy center in the middle of the Utah desert. The purpose of the data facility is to intercept all forms of communication, including the complete contents of private emails, cell phone calls, and Google searches, as well as all sorts of personal data trails, parking receipts, travel itineraries, bookstore purchases, and other digital pocket litter. By creating a giant database of every communication imaginable, the NSA hopes to monitor and preempt the spread of mass civil unrest in America.
Preparing drones for domestic oppression. Last week, the Justice Department reaffirmed its position that Obama administration can use armed drones to assassinate Americans.
Mm.
Under the NDAA, the whole of the United States has been declared a battlefield, meaning the drones may soon be used to execute American citizens on U.S. soil. Government that resorts to killing its own citizens without any legal process whatsoever is clearly a dictatorship engaged in domestic oppression. The only imaginable scenario under which this program could be justifiable was that as if the U.S. was under a state of martial law and the government was on the verge of collapse.
Preparing for martial law.
Okay.
The Department of Homeland Security has purchased over 1.6 billion rounds of ammunition in the last 10 months alone. At the height of combat operations in Iraq, the U.S. Army only used 5.5 million bullets a month. Why has the DHS stockpiled enough bullets for a 30-year war if it's not preparing for some form of domestic disorder? Preparation for martial law can be seen in numerous disguises. Perhaps the most chilling is a nationwide FEMA program which is training pastors and other religious representatives to become secret police enforcers who teach their congregations to obey the government in preparation for the implementation of martial law, property and firearm seizures, mass vaccination programs, and forced relocation. Characterizing the American people as a new target of the war on terror. This is frightening. The U.S. Army's Operating Concept 2016 to 2028 dictates the military's full spectrum operation will include operations within American borders, scenarios where Americans form into militia groups and become insurrectionists as a result of an economic collapse and have to be eliminated by the U.S. Army, have already been mapped out by military planners.
A leaked U.S. Army manual also reveals plans for the military to carry out civil disobedience operations during which troops will be used domestically to quell riots, confiscate firearms, and even kill Americans on U.S. soil during mass civil unrest. The Department of Homeland Security See Something, Say Something program habitually portrays middle-class Americans as terrorists. In addition, numerous DHS-funded reports have characterized liberty lovers and other constitutionalists as domestic terrorists.
Every indication presents us with the inescapable reality that the U.S. government is preparing for mass civil unrest at some point over the next 5 to 10 years. When we look at the recent history of nations that have suffered financial collapse, domestic disorder is clearly a key component of a deliberate agenda on behalf of the banking elite to undermine and loot economies, confiscating national sovereignty in the process. And they say here in this article, in part two, we'll explore why the elite, although keen on provoking mass civil unrest and even civil war, are destined to lose the battle. I look forward to that.
Me too. And Joseph Watson and Alex Jones, operate the InfoWars Nightly News. And you can go to that InfoWars.com, great site. Or even Prison Planet. Okay, and I wanted to go to you. You know what I wanted to do? I wanted to do a tribute. Tribute to New Orleans tonight because it's Mardi Gras night.
Oh,
do you know that?
Mm-hmm.
It's Fat Tuesday, and so I got a little Mardi Gras music, and we're gonna play that during for a break, and we'll be right back after that.
Oh, good. Need the support of government, and we paid for it, folks. such as when they reach 65 and hopefully are able to retire, suddenly the money's all gone. Oh, well, that is until the next war. Citigroup is a perfect example. Remember how shortly after the bailout, Citi wanted to raise salaries as the entire country was losing jobs? And how Citi wanted to pay one energy trader $100 million in 2009? And how later in 2009, Citigroup increased the salaries of its executives? At the same time, Citigroup just couldn't say no to its employees. It jacked up interest rates exorbitantly on its own credit card customers. See, it's never a problem asking you to pay more. From Senator Bernie Sanders writing in the Huffington Post, we learned that Citigroup hasn't paid federal taxes in 4 years. In 2010, Bank of America set up more than 200 subsidiaries in the Cayman Islands, which has a corporate tax rate of 0.0%, to avoid paying U.S. taxes. It worked. Not only did Bank of America pay nothing in federal income taxes, but it received a rebate from the IRS worth $1.9 billion that year. They are not alone. In 2010, J.P. Morgan Chase operated 83 subsidiaries incorporated in offshore tax havens to avoid paying some $4.9 billion in U.S. taxes. That same year, Goldman Sachs operated 39 subsidiaries in offshore tax havens to avoid an estimated $3.3 billion in U.S. taxes. Citigroup has paid no federal income taxes for the last 4 years after receiving a total of $2.5 trillion in financial assistance from the Federal Reserve during the financial crisis. On and on it goes. Wall Street banks and large companies love America when they need corporate welfare, but when it comes to paying American taxes or American wages, they want nothing to do with this country. This has got to change. I love the Senator's next point about the companies being American in name only. Here's the simple truth. You can't be an American company only when you want a massive bailout from the American people. You also have got to be an American company and pay your fair share of taxes. We struggle with the deficit and adequate funding for the needs of the American people. If Wall Street and corporate America don't agree, the next time they need a bailout, let them to go to the Cayman Islands. Let them go to Bermuda. Let them to go to the Bahamas. Let them ask those countries for corporate welfare. It's a point we've raised before. If these companies like Mitt Romney want to pay foreign taxes, which are often no taxes at all, then why turn to the U.S. government when they're in trouble and need to be bailed out? Are they American or aren't they? Reuters notes that in 2011, Citigroup didn't get any less generous with its own senior employees as it was in 2009 and 2010. Citigroup was one of 26 companies that paid its CEO more in 2011 than it paid in taxes that year.
Amazing. Citigroup is the financial service giant with a tax refund of $144 million based on prior losses, paid CEO Vikram Pandit $14.9 million in 2011. Despite an advisory note against it by 55% of the shareholders. Telecoms group AT&T paid CEO Randall Stephenson $18.7 million, but was entitled to a $420 million tax refund thanks to billions in tax savings from recent rules accelerating depreciation of assets. And drug maker Abbott Laboratories paid CEO Miles White $19 million while garnering a $586 million refund. All right, Abbott was 64 subsidiaries in 16 countries, considered by authorities to be tax havens, the Institute said.
If Mitt Romney is correct that corporations are people, then they're very clearly very greedy people. And now we get to the fun stuff. Who used to work at Citigroup? Treasury Secretary nominee Jack Lew, and what did he do to avoid taxes? Lou had up to $100,000 invested in the Cayman Islands in order to save on taxes. From Chris writing the other day, surprise, President Obama's new Treasury Secretary nominee, Jack Lew, had up to $100,000 investment in offshore tax haven in the Cayman Islands. The investment fund home was a P.O. box. As I said, when President Obama first nominated Jack Lew for Treasury Secretary, Lew is part of the banking problem, not the solution. Jack Lew may not have dumped as much money into offshore locations as, say, Mitt Romney, but like many others from the banking world, he is using tax avoidance tools mostly only available to 1% types. Lew didn't create the offshore fund, but you have to love that, once again, Citi, the bank that loves taxpayer money so much, it's practically addicted to it, offers easy ways for employees to once again avoid paying their fair share to the country that kept them alive to the tune of $336.1 billion. Who did have to pay taxes for the past 4 years? You and me. Who didn't get the bailout? You and me. And Jack Arvovosis is
Arvovosis.
Where is he? Joint JDMFS from Georgetown, worked in the U.S. Senate World Bank Children's Defense Fund, and is a stringer for The Economist. A frequent TV pundit, he's been on the O'Reilly Factor, Hartborough, World News Tonight, Nightline, and Reliable Sources. So he's an editor of the America blog.
So anyway,
that was quite a good article, I thought, that he wrote on that.
Really?
Short and to the point.
Gotta
go back.
There's an article here that was funny. Wife drops gun at McDonald's, accidentally shoots her husband. And a slave-loving pedophile enabler sent Obama a nasty gram about gay.
I don't know.
Want to check on?
No.
No? Okay. Catholic hypocrisy.
Sure, there's
That's
a lot of that.
You,
what? Let's go. There's some other good articles
okay.
on this.
Okay. All right, folks, hang on. Here we go.
Okay.
A little pop-up in the middle there. That's what happened. This is another sickening thing. No suspicion necessary. The Department of Homeland Security can still seize belongings without reason.
That's unbelievable that you
could
do that.
Yeah, I thought this was pretty sick. You know, I know it's happening everywhere. It happened to anybody.
These aren't always very good.
Yeah.
This site is mostly, I find it a little disjointed. The Fourth Amendment no longer means what you once thought it did. A new report reveals that the government has shrugged off concerns over the alleged constitutional infringements of its own citizens near international crossings. As an international review of the U.S. Department of Homeland Security's internal review of the U.S. Department of Homeland Security's procedures regarding the suspiciousless search and seizure of phones and laptops near the nation's borders has reaffirmed the agent's ability to bypass the Fourth Amendment protected rights. In a two-page executive summary published quietly last month to the official DHS website, the agency explains that a civil rights and civil liberties impact assessment of the office little-known power to collect personal electronics near international crossings has passed an auditor's interpretation of what does and doesn't violate the U.S. Constitution. Since 2009, the DHS has been legally permitted to seize and review the contents of personal electronic devices, including mobile phones, portable computers, and data disks, even without being able to cite any reasonable suspicion that those articles were involved in a crime. I don't think they should be allowed to do that.
Yeah, I mean, what, if he just stops you on the side of the road, if they pull you over, they say, give me your laptop.
And your cell phone?
I want to check and see.
By the border, it says. Crossing
the
border.
Even then,
I don't know.
Since 2009, the DHS is legally permitted.
No, we looked at it. When the initiative was introduced in August 2009 by DHS Secretary Janet Napolitano, she defended the policy change. Keeping America safe in an increasingly digital world depends on our ability to lawfully screen materials entering the United States, the Secretary said, adding, the new directives announced today strike the balance between respecting the civil liberties and privacy of all travelers while ensuring DHS can take the lawful actions necessary to secure our borders.
I don't know why they would think, what would be on a laptop that...
I don't know.
Somebody would be... I don't know. If there would be anything of any value, you think the guy would be carrying it, would put in a flash drive or something that would be,
in his pocket.
You could put it in,
So that's what can happen, folks.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any point to go on if it goes on.
If you want to read the article,
quite a long article.
You can go to inthetrenches.com, I believe.
Yeah, the thing here in the last paragraph, it says the DHS have been sued at least once over allegations that the seizure of personal electronic belongings to a U.S. citizen near an international border violated the Constitution. David House, a founding member of Bradley Manning's support network, says his laptop and other devices were confiscated without reason while returning to the U.S. from Mexico in November of 2010.
Oh, I can understand that.
According to legal filings, House was grilled about his association with Manning, an accused Army whistleblower arrested 6 months earlier, and WikiLeaks, the website Manning is alleged to have supplied with hundreds of thousands of diplomatic cables.
I can understand them. I can understand them stopping the guy at the border, knowing that he was a WikiLeaks guy.
Yeah.
That makes sense. I don't know. Anyway, it gets,
these things have, I don't know, it seems like all of our freedoms are just being eroded away.
Yeah.
Bit by bit.
I don't know. And Mr. Obama is a major culprit.
Yeah. He's very weak. He's run by the bankers.
Yeah, that's really what it is. Did you read this? Obama. Asked no questions.
No.
It wasn't very long. But it was an interesting thing.
From againstcronycapitalism.org.
Yeah. It says, whatever happened to question authority? There was a time in this country when the left, or at least parts of the left, really did question authority. Abby Hoffman, the Diggers, Berkeley Free Speech, what happened? For instance, yesterday, Chris Rock, once an irreverent comedian, told America to listen to its dad, by which he meant President Obama. He also said that the president was our boss. Our boss, listen to dad. This is still America, right? But don't question authority. Follow authority. You do what you are told. So what if the president has given himself the authority to assassinate U.S. citizens? No question, just obey. In the attached article, Daniel Hemingbird asks also where the spirit of rebellion has gone, and where did the left's, what has once called the new left, healthy fear of a centralized state go?
Well, everybody's in a hawk is the problem.
Well, that and I don't know. Things just disappeared after Obama got elected because they thought everything would be in the war. And then so many people just got sick of it, And other things happened, like the banking crisis happened, and people lost all their jobs. I mean, once you lose your jobs, it's like you don't have much chance. You're kind of like
without much chance of getting another one.
And you're not likely to be running to spending money on a bus to Washington D.C. From wherever to protest. You know, that's where the protests have gone. Economically,
they fought the economic war. They destroyed all the opposition.
Yeah.
They elected someone willingly because they didn't understand who he is. You know, he told them that he supported the wars, but they didn't believe that.
Well, actually,
they didn't.
No, he said that he was going to.
He voted.
I will be out of this war.
Yeah, but he voted for all the wars.
I will be out of Guantanamo, out of everything, is what he promised, and then he did nothing. But then, hey, we voted him back in, and you know why? Because the thought of Mitt Romney was a triple nightmare next to the thought of this guy.
I knew what he was when he wouldn't support his own people during the election fraud.
Yeah, yeah.
And that citizen, I didn't expect anything from him.
Yeah.
You know, when he wouldn't support his own people who were disenfranchised.
Well, he made a dumb little last remark, but he did. But he said that. I believe that there was irregularities, but Bush is the rightful.
He gave him all a pass.
Yeah. And he didn't mention anything about the disenfranchisement of black people.
No, he didn't even support his own people.
He didn't give a shit because he knew he was going to be president in 4 more years.
That's right.
He was already a marked man, you know. So, guys, it's all in the bag. It's all in the bag. But this is kind of, I'll just read this a little bit here, and you can read the article if you like when you're on your time. Years back, a popular notion among liberal thinkers was something called imperial overstretch. This was the idea that America's far-flung foreign policy commitments could bankrupt the country. Mr. Obama believes this, and before Chuck Hagel started talking the other day, he was supposed to explain it. And in his State of the Union speech next Tuesday, which is today, Mr. Obama will say again that Washington, after Iraq and Afghanistan, needs to invest at home. But isn't the federalization of pretty much everything in a diverse country like the U.S. just another exercise in imperial overstretch? In their own lives, the men and women of the left are all about keeping things simple. Back in the 70s, they were early adopters of E.F. Schumer's Small is Beautiful. Today, the watchwords are handcrafted and artisanal. How about some artisanal government?
I don't even know what that means.
Anybody know what an artisanal government is?
We certainly have to look that up.
Yeah. But
new word for me.
I don't know if I want to go through this whole thing here with you.
No.
Because
so that was interesting. Well, in his speech, what do you think he's going to talk about? Gun control?
Yeah, I think he's going to jerk everybody off like he has. You know, jerk them around.
Focus on something emotional.
Yeah. Because he's got all these gun people from the massacre who are going to be in the audience. Chris Murphy's bringing two, you know, of his closest newfound friends, you know, that he made. And all the senators are going to be bringing somebody from
a tragedy.
Whatever, you know.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, so they're going to make a big stay.
A big drama.
Big drama for gun control. And,
I don't think it's going to make any difference.
People are dead set against not giving up their guns.
Well, I don't think people should have to. I mean, I don't want a gun. I don't want any ammunition. I'm not comfortable with that. I don't know anything about guns. But I think people should have the right to own them for hunting and for sport.
For defense, too.
If that's what they
and
want.
For personal
but I
defense.
Don't think people should have assault rifles. I don't think that's necessary. Those are military weapons.
The next thing
people will want will be they want a rocket launcher in their garage or something. Yeah, come on.
Well, a lot of people have them. Believe me.
Oh, I know they do. You could buy them right off the internet.
I wanted to do this one tonight. We still have time because it's not much as told about this. This is really the first I've heard of it. Ethiopian annihilation of the Ogaden people.
Ogaden?
Yeah. Besieged, abused, ignored.
I never heard of them.
No, and I thought that's why it was important to bring it up.
Ogaden region of Ethiopia, impoverished ethnic Somali people are being murdered and tortured and raped, persecuted and displaced by government paramilitary forces. Illegal actions carried out with the knowledge and tacit support of donor countries, seemingly content to turn a blind eye to war crimes and crimes against humanity being committed by their brutal, repressive allies in the region, in a deaf ear to the pain and suffering of the Ogaden Somali people. Around 5 million traditionally nomadic pastoralists live in what is one of the least developed corners of the world, besieged by military oppression, drought, and famine. When the British, with due colonial duplicity, arrogantly handed the Ogaden region over to Ethiopia in 1954, the ethnic Somali people found themselves under occupation by what they regard as a foreign power. The centuries-old struggle for self-determination has since 1984 been taken up by the Ogaden National Liberation Front, predictably regarded as terrorists by the Ethiopian government, which hunts them down and with impunity tortures, imprisons, and rapes its members and suspected supporters while carrying out widespread extrajudicial killings. Oh, my God.
In 1992, as part of the Ethiopian People's Revolutionary Democratic Front, much trumpeted, never realized much of ethnic federalism that promised autonomy and cultural respect to the many tribal groups in the country. Ethnic Somalis and the Ogaden were officially acknowledged in inaugural regional elections held. The ONLF, a secular group in a large Muslim region, won 60% of the seats and formed a new regional government, Human Rights Watch reported. 2 years later, and in response to the will of the people, the ONLF called for a referendum on self-determination. The government's reaction to such democratic gall was to kill 81 unarmed civilians in the town of Wardhir, disband the regional parliament, arrest and imprison the vice president and several other members of the parliament, instigate mass arrest and indiscriminate killings. This brutal act ignited the current struggle and drove the ONLF into the shadows and its current guerrilla war.
We just have a couple of minutes.
That's wrong.
This one's wrong?
This is the one.
What's the correct time?
8:47.
Oh, rich in resources. This is the region. The region, rich in oil and gas reserves, is potentially the wealthiest area of Ethiopia. Resources that the indigenous people are understandably keen to benefit from, that the EPRDF sees as another party asset to add to its burgeoning portfolio. Genocide Watch tells us that immediately after oil and gas were discovered in the Ogaden, Ethiopian government forces evicted large numbers of Ogaden Somalis from their ancestral grazing lands and herded them into internally displaced person camps, causing a humanitarian disaster. If the ONLF are correct and their views sound more than plausible, the Ethiopian military intends to secure the resources for the government and exclude the local people. The African Faith and Justice Network confirms such suspicions, saying, with the discovery of petroleum leading to the exploration missions by foreign companies, the government's motives are questionable. Upfront fees for exploration rights are reputed to have been sold to foreign corporations for between $50 and $100 million, paid by under-informed, overexcited multinationals who subsequently pull out, having underestimated the logistical problem of working in the region. China Petroleum was one such. They were subjected to an unprecedented, ill-judged attack by the ONLF in 2007, it caused the deaths of 9 Chinese workmen, according to China Daily. 65 Ethiopian employees. And 65. They left out the and. 65 Ethiopian employees. the Ethiopian government, itching to intensify the conflict that had been simmering for over three decades, retaliated with excessive brutality by HRW reports, launching a brutal counterinsurgency campaign in the five zones of the Somali region primarily affected by the conflict. The Ethiopian National Defense Forces has deliberately and repeatedly attacked civilian populations, killing hundreds of men and women and children.
Displaced and destitute. Hundreds of terrified Ogaden Somalis have since fled the affected areas. They seek refuge in neighboring Somalia and Kenya from widespread Ethiopian military attacks on civilians and villages that amount to war crimes and crimes against humanity. Large numbers have been made homeless and destitute. Acute numbers are difficult to collate due to
restricted
access. However, human rights groups estimate the number to be greater than 100,000. The Ogaden GW states
Genocide Watch.
Oh, Genocide Watch.
That's what GW is.
States has been transformed into a vast military occupied area with thousands of internally displaced persons or IDP camps. Most displaced persons, the International Displacement Monitoring Center reports, sought shelter with relatives or safety in the bush rather than gathering in organized camps where widespread abuse is known to take place, including starvation that GW describes as genocide by attrition. Mm-hmm. These desperate, frightened people are not regarded as refugees and so receive no humanitarian support from the United Nations High Commission for Refugees. And the EPRDF, consistent with their duplicitous approach to government, fails to meet dutiful obligations under the historic Kampala Convention, which reaffirms that national authorities have the primary responsibility to provide assistance to IDPs.
Displaced persons, I guess.
Indigenous displaced persons or something. To address the plight of people uprooted within their borders, and ruling party ignores these requirements, acting not in accordance with international law, the federal constitution, or indeed their moral duty.
So they rip these people out of their homes and away from their farms, throw them into camps, and then let them starve to death.
Wait, where have we heard this before?
Doesn't it sound like Palestine?
Doesn't it sound like Israel and Palestine?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Same thing.
Same program. Uh-huh. Why isn't JW or Genocide Watch talking about Palestine ever? I never hear them talk about Palestine.
This is quite a long article.
Very long. What I wanted to, why I brought it up was because it's never. This is something that I didn't hear about.
No.
And I think it's something.
I haven't heard it mentioned at all.
No, you should go if you want to read more on this. Please go to globalresearch.ca and check it out.
And this article was by Graham Peebles.
Yeah, it's a good article. It was published on the 7th of this month. But go to globalresearch.ca and read about it.
And Somalia is a very poor country.
Yeah, you know, the last you heard of Somalia Somalia was the pirates.
Right, okay, and these are Somalian people that are stuck in Ethiopia because it was annexed given to them.
Sad.
You know, arbitrarily.
Yeah.
But they consider themselves Somalis.
They're independent, yeah. So, anyway, let's see what we got. We got 6 minutes. 6 minutes left to show.
And when we have a little audio.
We do, I think. So I'm going to get down to see it. This is a one that's called Software That Tracks People on Social Media, was created by a defense firm, Raytheon.
This this is really important that you be aware of this.
Uh-huh. Oh, it's been removed.
That video. Anything that's really good.
What this said, though, was, let's go to the article. It says, a multinational security firm has secretly developed software capable of tracking people's movements and predicting future behavior by mining data from social networking websites. A video obtained by The Guardian reveals how an extreme-scale analytics system created by Raytheon, the world's fifth largest defense contractor, can gather vast amounts of information about people from websites including Facebook, Twitter, and Foursquare. Foursquare's a new one.
Never heard of that one either.
Raytheon says it has not sold the software name Riot or Rapid Information Overlay Technologies to any clients.
I don't believe that.
Yeah, I don't either.
So it predicts future behavior? That's interesting.
That's what it says. Based on their Facebook or Twitter account.
Huh. Ryan Gallagher. Not coming up.
Yeah, he'll get there.
Must be blacked out as we speak. They certainly took the video off.
That's possible.
Shouldn't take this long to come up.
Wait.
Okay, I've got you.
I'm trying, how Raytheon tracks you online.
At IKEA, we don't just design.
Nick's going, we know what he looks like, Now we want to try to predict where he may be in the future. So we're going to go ahead and call this this get top places method. It's a very basic analytic, but it's going to return back a pie chart that'll show us the top 10 places that Nick checks in. And you see here the gym is the top place, followed closely by Dallas-Fort Worth. So we're going to analyze the place. So we're going to type in gym, and then username Nick Kniez. This is going to go out to Koala and Foursquare and bring back all the check-ins and do some analysis on them. So we're going to go ahead and click on View Graphs. And this brings back check-ins by month. You can see here that he's checked in the most in June at the gym. I guess he's getting ready for the beach season, working on a six-pack. You can also see that the check-ins by day, Monday is the highest day, followed closely by Wednesday. And then here's the most interesting. If you look in check-ins by hour, 6 a.m. appears to be obviously the most frequently visited time at the gym. So if you ever did want to try to get a hold of Nick or maybe get a hold of his laptop, you might want to visit the gym at 6 a.m. on Monday. Now, one last thing we want to show is the graphical Riot object browser. We can type Nick in here, and this will bring back Nick's object, and we can click on that, and that will go out and bring back all the associations for that object. And this is also another way, if you're trying to track somebody in cyberspace, you can see Nick is shouting out in Twitter to different users. You can also see some phone numbers that are linked in with this. So the graphical object browser is a good way to kind of visualize the relationships between all your objects.
Wow.
They can find you anyway.
Wherever you are.
Wherever you are.
Social media is nothing but a way of spying on people that they willingly adopt.
Yeah. Just like,
oh boy.
One thing that I don't do, and one thing that I can't really tolerate is the thought of being tracked like that. You know what I mean? That really it bothers me.
Uh-huh.
Like they track you any way, shape, form.
I don't like the idea of it at all.
Well, I want to thank
not you. That I'm doing anything, but I just don't
no, it's just
like
the,
it.
The thought
it feels
of,
like an
yeah.
invasion of privacy.
Exactly. It is. That's exactly what it is.
But on that note, I guess we've come to the end of the show.
Yes.
We want to thank folks for being with us tonight. We hope you stay tuned.
And join us tomorrow night.
For tomorrow night. And I hope you have a good evening, folks.
Good night, everyone.
Good night. After the fact, because you won't have any.